Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of Radio Gore Press.
Back once again.
Yeah, I'm Sarah.
I'm Phil.
Last week we talked about the Amityville Horror.
We did.
And The Conjuring quite a lot.
Mm.
And after the show, we had a bit of a chat, and we were fairly set on going for something completely different again.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe going for, like, meta horror.
Yeah.
So we tossed around the idea of doing Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon,
mm-hmm.
which I, spoilers, absolutely adore, and Phil has never seen.
No.
But then, out of nowhere, we realised, yeah, it's February, it's Women in Horror Month. And as a site that is quite predominantly, it has a serious female voice.
That it does.
As far as horror sites go. So we thought we had to honour it. We had to do something. So we changed our minds and we came up with Ginger Snaps, which was one that was actually recommended on the Twitter page.
It was, wasn't it?
So yeah, before that though, before we review Ginger Snaps, we're going to talk about 5 notable female-oriented horror films. Not necessarily a top 5, but 5 that we wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
So go on, do you want to start us off, Phil?
Why not? Teeth.
Teeth.
Can't be getting much more woman horror than Teeth.
Yeah, that is, it's very female specific.
It is. Yikes.
And it's one that we covered in one of our Gormentry podcasts mm-hmm. as well, which it was a indeed. Lot of fun to do. Was that the first time you'd seen it?
No.
Was it
no,
not?
No, I'd seen it before.
Okay, what do you make of it?
I like it. Well, like is a weird choice of word, I think.
No, I don't think so. Well, I tell you what do you think of it as a horror fan? And what do you think of it as a bloke?
Okay. Yeah, it tends to get very... Certainly as a bloke, it tends to get very, all men are evil. But I think it's all very tongue-in-cheek, so it gets away with
oh,
it.
Oh, massively, yeah.
I think that's one of the things that some people don't necessarily get.
Yeah, I've spoken to a lot of people and they don't really see the humour in it,
yeah.
which I find baffling, because to me it's very much a dark comedy. And I don't think it's a very preachy film as well, despite
no.
what a lot of people say. I don't think it's very down with men are bad, because she ends up being kind of a douchebag at the
yeah.
end as well.
Yeah.
Nobody comes off looking very good. But I just think it is a lot of fun, despite the subject matter, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous. I mean, it's a vagina dentata. How could they not see the comedy in that? That just boggles my mind.
Yeesh.
Moving on from that.
Flinching, just thinking about it.
Moving on. Kind of, this is a good one to go hand in hand with Ginger Snaps, really. Another one that came out a year or two ago, directed by two, not only women, but
mm-hmm.
twins.
Yep.
Who kind of came out of nowhere. American Mary.
It starring.
Starring Catherine Isabel again, yeah.
She of Ginger Snaps fame.
Yeah. I didn't get to see this at Fright Fest.
Sad times.
Sadly, I couldn't stick around for the... I think it was on the Monday. But I remember taking to Twitter after it had screened, and just the response from people was insane.
Yeah.
And really, really piqued my interest, and I couldn't wait to watch it. And then, after a little while, it got to be that people were so enthusiastic about it that... I started to go the other way and go, well, now I'm getting bored of hearing about it and I don't want to see this film. Can't be that good. And then I watched it and I'll be honest, it kind of blew me away.
Yeah?
Yeah. I really, really enjoyed it. I just enjoyed it because it was just a bit different. It just felt fresh. I don't think it was anything to do with the fact that it was directed by women or had a female protagonist that wasn't your bog standard Scream Queen
yeah.
or Survivor Girl or whatever. But it was just... It just felt fresh.
Mm.
And I think that's why I loved it. It was definitely a film that has its flaws.
I
think a lot of people
yeah.
definitely get the blinkers on and just go at it full pelt and fail to see what could have been done better.
Mm.
And I still maintain that the Soskers should not have put themselves in the film and certainly shouldn't have done accents. Apparently they're failed actresses.
Okay.
Which... That sounds
apparently.
Really that sounds really bitter, and I couldn't cite my sources, but that's what I've heard. And to be honest, I don't know.
The internet told me.
I think they're better off behind the lens, yeah, perhaps.
I'm inclined to agree.
Yeah. Having seen See No Evil and hated it, and I, not because I'm any kind of film snob, because I love me a WWE production from time to time. But yeah, it's just a really bad film. So I'm really interested to see where they take See No Evil 2. I find it an odd choice for them. But if they wanted to do a studio, fair play. So definitely, definitely interested to see where that goes. What did you think of American Mary?
Yeah, I think I was perhaps not quite as enamoured by it. Again, I remember thinking it's, I don't know,
It's a very flawed film.
Yeah, I think gendered movies can be quite divisive, yeah, in the sense definitely. Of in the sense of how they portray, because yeah, again they have this big old like rape party essentially,
yeah,
and it's like really.
I definitely had a problem with how over sexualized she appeared in a lot of scenes. Like she didn't need to do surgery and lingerie. Yeah. Like I get it, but that was perhaps a little bit counterintuitive to what they, yeah, were trying to say, I think. So, I don't know. It's a film that I really loved on first viewing. Second viewing, I picked up on some of the things that I maybe didn't like as much.
Yeah.
So it maybe went from like a 9 out of 10 to an 8.
Okay.
But it's still a film that I love. Movie, yeah, definitely. So what about next on the list?
The next one. Again, we covered this one. Me and Rosie, all those years ago. Switchblade Romance.
Yep. Or Tension.
Tension.
Yeah, Jamie Kinshaw might have gone, but the bad pronunciation stays. You're going to have to keep up with that. So Switchblade Romance. Can't even say the English title. Christ, this is not does not bode well. So, when was that made? Was it about 2005, 2006?
Yeah, kind of early, mid-2000s.
It was, oh God, I can't even pronounce the director's name.
Alexandre Aja.
Yeah, I think it's Aja.
AJA. Sure. Something like that.
So this was prior to his Hills Have Eyes remake, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which I think was
2007?
Yeah, I think 2006, I want to say. Yeah. So maybe this was... Oh, God.
Perhaps.
No, actually, no. Now I want to say like 2003 for this.
Mm.
I've changed my mind completely, which makes it 11 years old this year.
Wow.
If I'm right. Crazy. It's aged pretty well, I think.
Mm.
And I think a lot of people who've seen it maybe in the past couple of years don't speak quite as highly of it as I might.
Mm-hmm.
Because the twist horror has been done to death.
Yes, very much so.
No pun intended. But I think, although once you get to the end, the big reveal happens. Obviously, I don't want to spoil too much. There's a twist. That's a spoiler. But yeah, once that all happens, I think if you think about it too much, it's like, well, that, no, none of that
kind
makes sense now.
Apart, doesn't it? Yeah.
But in terms of what it did for the genre, I think it's a really, really solid film.
Mm.
And two very strong, very individual female leads.
Yeah.
I think definitely benefited from.
Though I think perhaps that might not be quite as it doesn't quite necessitate the female protagonists quite as much as the others on the list.
No, absolutely not. I just, but again, I think it's
just a point.
It makes a nice change to the average,
yeah,
female role,
yeah,
in horror.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's again, it was just a bit different. I think a lot of films have benefited from that film existing. Mm.
Yeah, it did kind of catapult him onto
into
the mainstream, didn't
definitely
it?
And I think it's a film that's been referenced quite a bit as well, and a lot of other films that have come since maybe owe a thing or two to Switchblade Romance.
Yeah,
so I definitely think it has a place on the list. On from that one,
similar vein,
similar same genre. Country
subgenre, yeah, the whole
same country, another French one. It's a film that me and Jamie have covered in a podcast.
Okay.
So basically, I think we may have done the last one on the list as well.
Really?
Yeah, so I think we've talked about these at length already. Sorry. So number four, or number two, depending on how you're counting, is Inside. We could not ignore this. We couldn't not put this on the list, because pregnancy horror is about as specific to women as you could possibly get. And it is so, simple and so well executed and so disgustingly wince-inducing and terrifying.
Scissors.
Yeah, it's just a brilliant, brilliant film. Brilliant film. Had me captivated from beginning to end. I've only seen it once.
Yeah?
Yeah, I keep meaning to revisit it, but I wanted to leave it a little while. Yeah.
Unsurprisingly. Maybe, unsurprisingly.
So I think that, without question, belongs on our list.
Yeah, very much so.
So, number 1/5.
Spit on your grave.
Don't do that.
I'm sorry.
That's rude. Original.
Yes,
1978, I Spit on Your Grave, not the remake, which was all right. It was a kind of valid remake. I think I gave it quite a generous review on the site, if I remember rightly, and then reread it and went, past Sarah, what were you thinking? I do that a lot. I'm very generous, and then I rewatch things and go, oh, no. But the original, again, because it's so specific to women, we couldn't not have something from the rape revenge genre. I've had this conversation with several people before, and if anybody can think of like a male-oriented rape revenge movie, please do contact me. Off the top of my head, things like Deliverance, but there's nothing, absolutely nothing that I could think of that works in the same sort of first half rape, second half revenge format that the female-oriented ones do. There is male rape and revenge in other films, but it's not necessarily the focus of. And it's kind of... it's an obvious imbalance, but I think maybe a male version would be quite an interesting and very difficult task for somebody to take on. But I think that I'd be really interested to see how that played out.
Well, I think with kind of female rape and revenge, there's an inherent like power imbalance there, and I think that's what the film is about. It's overcoming that, which that's the growth of the character.
Yeah, which I think would make a male version all the more interesting. Yeah. I think that would be really... I wouldn't like to be the person who tackled it, I'll be honest. But I think that would certainly push some boundaries and perhaps be quite important in the subgenre. Because I think a lot of people write off rape revenge movies as nothing but either titillation or exploitation or just plain garbage. Whereas I think they have a place.
Mm-hmm.
If it's done well, and I'm not necessarily saying that I Spit on Your Grave is the best of them out there. I can name a couple more that I would much rather watch. But in terms of popularity, fame,
it's up there, isn't
iconic, it's the one that everybody goes to. I think I really, really enjoy arguing the feminist perspective on rape revenge movies, because a lot of people just write them off immediately. But I think they're quite important and occasionally can be quite empowering to female viewers.
Okay.
And I am speaking personally. I don't know. Don't dare to speak for anybody else. But on a personal level, I can find them quite empowering sometimes. They're kind of like, fuck yeah. Go you. So I do think they have a place.
Okay.
And I will, I will always argue that rape revenge flicks have some merit and that aren't just trashy exploitation fare, as some people would have you believe.
Yeah, I think so. There's an argument there.
Yeah. So what do you think? I mean, when was the last time you watched it?
Oh, a long time ago, to be honest. It's been a long time.
Is it a film you'd watch again, or would you not bother? Because I think it's not a great film. It's not a very accomplished film. No. And it's a tough watch.
I think I'd be curious. No, curious is perhaps the wrong word. Because obviously those, you know, kind of lots of kind of films around the same time were very similar. You know, the other one is Last House on the Left.
Yeah.
You know, be interesting to see how they all kind of match up and stuff. So I would be intrigued to perhaps watch it again.
Yeah. But I think Last House on the Left is the more accomplished film.
Mm-hmm.
But it loses something with the weird Benny Hill music and the the soundtrack. I mean, I don't really know what was going on
there.
David Hess, I loved the man, God rest his soul, but he should never have done the soundtrack. I don't know how that came about. If I remember rightly, apart from maybe some music in the church, kind of at the halfway point in the film, the real big turning point, there's no incidental music that I can think of. There's absolutely no score. And obviously most films, most horror films, just films in general, have a score to help guide your emotions you're supposed to be feeling throughout the film. And I think this film, it affords it a kind of immediacy and a more of a feeling of reality, I guess, that there is no score, because in life, obviously, there is no score, which kind of makes it all the more harsh.
Yeah.
But I like that. I like that. I have no idea if that was a stylistic choice or a budget constraint or what, but I think that worked really well.
Yeah.
So it's a film I rate, definitely. Are there any films you would have included that didn't make the list?
A couple of ones. I enjoyed Mama.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Obviously, there was a bit of weird kind of CGI-ish at the end, but I think it was a very kind of low-key...
Yeah, definitely.
Kind of ghosty movie. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I think I watched it last year. It's one I've been meaning to watch again.
Yeah.
But... pretty much exactly what you've just said. Nothing to add to that, really. Quite atmospheric film with some poopy CGI right at the end. But yeah, worth a watch, definitely. Yeah. There's a couple I would have liked to include. Obviously, Carrie.
Original.
She's my... Obviously, Christ on a bike. Yeah, the remake would... Need to bleach my brain so I forget all about it. Made me feel dirty.
Oh, wow.
Terrible, terrible film. And it was directed by a woman.
Really?
They could have done something really interesting with it, and it was terrible. But the original, Carrie, is just one of my all-time favourite horror movie chicks. She is such a great character. Sissy Spacek is just... She was perhaps a little bit too old for the role, but she looked so innocent and... She was just wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. And Piper Laurie as well. I mean, it was such a female-driven horror. And to think Stephen King binned it.
Yeah, well, he has a weird relationship with the films. His films.
No, he binned the book.
Oh, when he wrote the
actual... Yeah, that was his... I think that was the first of his books that he had published. But he threw it in the bin.
Wow.
And his wife fished it out. So
imagine that.
If it weren't for Mrs. King, it might never be a movie. So thank you.
I heard the other day that Piper Laurie was convinced the whole film was a comedy.
Really?
Yeah, because she was playing that character so vindictively.
Wow.
She convinced herself it was a comedy.
Christ, she played that straight. That's commitment. But yeah, the only other film, which might be a little bit obvious going from the title, that I would have liked to include was The Woman.
Mm-hmm.
But it was vetoed because you haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it, I'm afraid.
I am not going to say anything more about it because I'd like to cover that in a podcast at some point.
Let's do it.
I think we could get some real mileage out of that. So yeah, that's our list. If you don't agree on any of them or all of them or some of them, we'd really, really love to hear from you. So do get in touch. We are on Twitter at Radio Gore Press.
We are indeed.
And you can also email us mail@gorepress.com. And you can visit the site and comment under the page that this will be on at www.gorepress.com. Loads of ways.
All of the
ways. Loads of ways. We're still the Gore Press Gorecast on Facebook, but we're working on that.
Two people to unlock the page.
We'll figure that out. But yeah, we'd really love to hear from you. Specifically on this subject, I think, because Women in Horror Month is something that's close to our hearts. So please do chip in. But for now, we're going to take a teeny tiny break. Well, a break of about an hour and 40 minutes. So that we can re-familiarise ourselves with Ginger Snaps, and then we'll be back with a review. So, in a bit.
For two sisters.
Together forever.
United against life as we know it.
With an appetite for the macabre.
I'm slitting my throat. You should definitely hang.
All it takes is one night. One bite.
Let's get out of here.
What was it?
A big dog, maybe?
Did I change last night? Howl at the moon.
Ginger's changing.
How do you feel?
Wicked.
Yeah!
being normal teenage girls.
I'm not dying!
I think she's gone.
Ginger snaps and bites.
We're almost not even related anymore.
And we're back.
We are indeed.
To talk to you for 20 minutes or so about Ginger Snaps.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a film that I saw for the first time when it first came out, which was, oh, crap.
A while ago.
I should probably have checked this. I want to say 2001. 2000.
Close enough.
2000. I remember being in college. I remember the only cinema it was playing at was the Corner House, which is kind of like an arty-farty cinema in Manchester. And just bloody loving it. Absolutely loving it. Back then, I would have been about 18. So I didn't necessarily love it because it was a female-oriented horror. Obviously, I understood the subtext.
It's kind of hard not to, really.
It's pretty heavy-handed. But I just remember absolutely adoring it. And 14 years later, Jesus Christ, that makes me feel old. But not much has changed.
Not going to say a word.
Not much has changed. I still love it as much as I always did. Mm-hmm. And I've probably seen it about 20 times since then.
Quite a few times.
Yeah. It's one I visit a lot. How about you?
Yeah, I saw it once, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was on late on Channel 4.
Okay.
One day, and I stayed up late and watched it and really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But I think that was about it, really.
Had you seen it since, or was this just the second time?
The second time, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, for the uninitiated, here's what the back of the DVD has to say. The craft meets the howling in this edgy modern werewolf tale. Hee hee, see what they did there? In which a teenage girl must choose between saving herself and joining her sister in an otherworldly existence. Plagued by the adolescent woes of biology, high school, dating and parents, the Fitzgerald sisters, Ginger and Bridget, are looking for something to stir up their mundane existence. However, they get more than they bargained for when Ginger is attacked by a snarling, rabid, in capital letters for some reason, beast that generates a tremendous change in Ginger. The terrifying force quickly takes hold of Ginger's body and mind, threatening to destroy the sisters' special bond and the lives of those around them. As Ginger becomes a ferocious she-wolf who is out for blood, Bridget races to devise a potion to rid Ginger of her demon. At the 11th hour of Ginger's metamorphosis, the creature inside her takes over and finally turns on Bridget. Who will triumph in this life and death struggle between the best of friends and the closest of sisters? That's so spoilerific.
I'm about to say it's touching, but that's basically 90% of the entire film.
I don't think I'd ever read that before. I think I might have been outraged if I'd been aware of that. That's terrible. That's really terrible. I do quite like the tagline, though. They don't call it the curse for nothing.
Ooh.
Clever shit. So, yeah, that's the end. That's the whole film.
I guess
we're
that's done. See you next time.
That's tremendously spoilerific. I'm really annoyed at that. So, yeah, that's basically the entire film. If you haven't seen it yet, I'm sorry, but blame Lionsgate Films,
yeah,
and Mosaic
Lionsgate
Entertainment.
Films and Mosaic Entertainment.
That's really bad. So that's everything that happens in the film.
Mm-hmm.
The sisters are Catherine Isabel and Emily Perkins, respectively. Obviously, Catherine Isabel we talked about
briefly in
American Mary. She is utterly wonderful.
She is.
And many people that I know have met her.
Yeah.
And have said that she is utterly, utterly lovely.
Aww.
So, yeah, she's wonderful. She's kind of underrated. She's not the best actress ever.
No.
But she's pretty good when she puts her mind to it. I think she gets maybe the short shrift a lot of the time because some of the scripts, I guess, that she's a part of are not wonderful.
Yeah.
I am including Freddy versus Jason in the excellent category,
yeah,
by the way.
Of course.
But yeah, she's kind of a weird actress that always appears naked in films, but never appears naked in films. She's never actually done nudity, it's always stunt doubles.
Okay.
But her characters often show nudity, it's very odd. Weird little factoid for you. Not that I've looked it up or anything. I want to know if Catherine Isabel's tits that I'm seeing on screen are actually Catherine Isabel's tits.
Of course, why wouldn't
That's
you?
Fair enough. But yeah, she's utterly wonderful. Emily Perkins, again, is an actress that we don't see very much of. I did read somewhere, and don't quote me on this, but I think she was in the UK somewhere doing lecturing.
Okay.
Like, quite a few years ago, at maybe, like, I don't know, Oxbridge, one of those. I can't remember what subject it was.
Quite a career change, really.
Yeah, but she has done acting since.
Okay.
She was in a few episodes of Supernatural, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, we
yeah.
talked about that, didn't we?
We did, briefly. Yeah. And obviously she was in Gingersnaps 2 and 3.
Of course.
3, we will... The less said about that, one, the better.
Gingersnaps in space.
Oh, man, that would have been so much better. That would have been amazing. As it stands.
Yeah.
Turd. The second film, however, Emily Perkins... it's her film.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine Isabel's in it in brief flashback scenes... Spoilers! She dies at the end. But the back of the DVD basically tells you that. You can't be angry at me.
Yeah.
But yeah, the second one is the Emily Perkins Show, and she's pretty goddamn awesome. I highly recommend that as far as sequels go.
Okay.
But we're not talking about the sequels, we're talking about this one. As far as werewolf movies go, how much, like, knowledge do you have about werewolf movies? Are they a subgenre that you like? Generally?
I've seen a few.
Just three. Mostly,
yeah, pretty much. American Werewolf in London, American Werewolf in Paris, The Howling, Gingersnaps. Haven't seen any of the kind of classic Wolfman.
Really?
Or indeed the remake
of
The Wolfman.
No, I wouldn't bother with that one.
I think I probably have it on DVD somewhere.
Dig that one out. Dig it out for sure. Or at least watch, like, Monster Squad.
Yeah, could do that.
Wolfman's got nards. I love that film. So, as kind of have a passing interest in the werewolf subgenre, Gingersnaps does it differently.
Yeah.
It does it the same in that she gets scratched. Like, they subscribe to the same mythos, mostly, apart from the whole, like, silver bullet being the only way you can kill them. Silver bullet, there's another one. That's a good film. Yeah, so they change things up quite a bit, but they mostly subscribe to the same mythos that was set up in the classics, but they give it a female hormonal twist.
Mm-hmm.
In that basically the entire film is what's the best word for it, not an analogy, kind of,
well, kind of is.
Okay, analogy, we'll use analogy. It's an analogy for kind of female coming of age.
Mm-hmm.
When you're 14, 15 and your hormones are raging and things start happening, changing.
We've all been there.
Well, one of us, 50% of us has been there. It's me.
Thank
if you didn't know.
I was wondering that, but you've played
it
now,
I thought
so
I'd put your mind at rest.
Just checking
there
out.
There wasn't a portion
period.
Of your teens that you've forgotten, just so you know. Or maybe there was, I don't know. Didn't know you back then. Let's move on.
Yeah.
But as far as werewolf films go, and as far as teen movies go, I guess you would call it a teen horror. I guess any films where teenagers are the protagonists is... yeah. Definitely did it way different to Teen Wolf. Way, way different. But I guess any film with teenagers as protagonists, you could call a teen horror, really, couldn't you?
Yeah.
So, as far as teen horrors go, it's definitely way more intelligent than the average. Much, much more intelligent. I know a lot of people that love this film, but not a lot of people that talk about it, sadly.
Okay.
So I would definitely refer to it as somewhat of an unsung cult classic. I think it definitely deserves a wider audience. Because although it's very, very low budget, it's Canadian, it's not glossy. At all.
No.
Definitely is completely without that Hollywood sheen. But it still looks good. And it hasn't dated a vast amount.
Not hugely, no.
Which is a testament to practical effects.
Always back to practical effects.
And there's... I can't think of one little bit of CGI in this film.
Didn't notice any.
Apart from perhaps during the transformation... Like, maybe on her spine when she's in the car.
Yeah.
Either way, it's very well done. Mm. And I would hazard a guess that, like, 90% of it is practical effects. And it bloody is just all the better for it.
Mm.
I know we talk about this a lot, but I can't stress it enough. I really can't. It just makes all the difference. When you know that the actors are reacting to what's there, like even shoddy practical effects tend to look better than CGI because it's real, it's tangible. I genuinely can't say that enough. Okay, so on second viewing, you liked it on the first viewing?
Mm-hmm.
How did it hold up?
Yeah, still good. I was thinking earlier, it was actually I found weird was I don't think I've seen a werewolf transformation happen that gradually.
Yeah, normally it's quite... Well, I guess that's the other thing that they turn their back on as far as the mythos goes. It wasn't full moon based.
Yeah,
it was just a gradual change that was permanent, I guess.
This is true, yeah.
Which is quite interesting. Yeah, you're right. Anything else? Just your thoughts on second viewing, basically. Is it a film you'd watch again? Would you watch it a third time?
Yeah, I did enjoy it, yeah. I think it was...
It's got pretty good rewatch value, I think.
Mm. We were talking about this, I wasn't hugely keen on the actual design of the werewolf. But,
yes, we did talk about that a bit.
I mean, that's just personal opinion.
We were a bit confused by the snout.
Yeah, it didn't seem to have the right shape.
Yeah. I think the design of the creature is pretty good. I think the basis is in animals that exist, and then they did their own thing with it. A couple of things we maybe would have changed, but I really, really dug the way that it moved. Like, obviously it was a guy in a suit.
Yeah.
But I think it really benefited from that. It moved like a real lumbering animal would. Yeah. I thought that was brilliant. I don't know. I don't think I hated the design as much as you did.
I didn't hate it. I think it just struck me as...
It was a bit distracting,
like, that snout
maybe.
Just looked really odd. And yeah. I don't know whether I was used to kind of seeing Howling or American Werewolf, but you get an idea of what a wolf looks like, and it just seemed to not quite fit that somehow. It struck me as a bit odd is all, but, you know, like I said, personal opinion, so...
Definitely, well, obviously personal opinion, because werewolves don't exist.
Yeah, this is true.
So, I guess everybody's interpretation of them is going to be a little bit different.
Yeah.
So I guess all we can really say is it's not our favourite. It's no American Werewolf in London.
Ah, that transformation sequence.
Wow. And that hasn't dated. No, that looks amazing still. That's incredible. I'm going to stop talking about practical effects now. But if any filmmakers are listening, stop using CGI. Because we said so. And we have authority. Is there anything else you would like to mention about Ginger Snaps? South Park.
Yeah. I don't think so. No.
Off the top of your head, given the limited amount of werewolf movies you've seen, favourite. Is it going to be American Werewolf in London?
I think so. I think I like, obviously, kind of, American Werewolf is a dark comedy, and I like that.
So tragic.
I like that. And obviously, always get them mixed up. Is it Rob Bottin or Rick Baker who did American Werewolf?
I'm really embarrassed to say. I actually watched a documentary called Nightmare Factory about 3 hours ago.
No.
So in the last 3 hours, I've somehow forgotten that information. I want to say Rick Baker.
Yeah, I'm inclined to say then Rob Bottin did The Thing, perhaps. Because I always associate those two as being like the pinnacle of practical effects in that era, but anyway,
certainly like one of a handful. Tom Savini as well.
This is true. But yeah, that is my favourite.
Yeah,
I think.
And to be honest, even though that was like what 1980,
I
can't think of a werewolf transformation that's topped that since, which is kind
it
of
looks
embarrassing.
Painful.
It's embarrassing
it
for
looks
the movie
so
industry.
Painful.
Nobody's been able to top a movie from 34 years ago. Get with it, guys. But yeah, obviously we don't want to spend too much time talking about films that aren't Ginger Snaps, as we usually do. As we are wont to do.
Yeah.
Tangenty and all that. Ginger Snaps. The beginning sequence is quite protracted.
Yeah.
Basically a sequence of... Like, they're obsessed with suicide.
They are, aren't they?
Kara's out by 16 or dead in the scene or but together forever or something like that is their like motto. So they're obsessed with killing themselves at some point because they hate their peers so much. They hate their parents.
They've all been there. Like,
well,
actually.
Well, to a but there's a huge emphasis on kind of teen suicide, and the beginning credits, pretty much before you meet, like your introduction to the two main characters is through a series of photos that they have taken to do with a school project about life in Bailey Downs where they live, and they chose to interpret that as here are loads of pictures of us with faked suicides. But that is so well done. The music over the top is perfect. It's so well executed and so memorable. And I can't remember seeing anything like it before or since.
No.
Not done quite like that anyway. And I just think that was a really wonderful way to introduce the characters.
Really sets them up really well, doesn't it?
And although some of the dialogue is maybe a little bit 90s today, it's really cool that although you can obviously understand everything they're saying, it's nice that they almost have this little way of communicating. You really get the idea that the sisters really do have a really good bond. Mm. It's very believable.
Yeah, yeah.
Their world is very insular, and I didn't doubt that for a second. I thought it was great. And it's integral to whether you give a shit, I suppose,
about
the outcome.
Of course.
She dies.
Spoilers.
The DVD did it. But I think it's very, very, very important. And they nailed it.
Yeah.
Who actually directed this? I don't know anything about the makers, I'll be honest. I should have done some research. I feel bad now.
I know I keep going on about it, but their relationship reminded me a lot of the sisters from Tale of Two Sisters.
The older one's
slightly more domineering and kind of, but like really overprotective.
Yeah.
The shy younger one. But that kind of dynamic was, you got the sense that there was a real love there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I
would not loved. Have made that connection without you saying that.
Mm.
But now that you've mentioned it, 100%. Yeah, definitely. Mm. It's quite an interesting comparison, actually. Yeah, it's directed by a guy called John Fawcett. And written by a woman called Karen Walton. And the director and the writer came up with the story together. I don't know if this is going to make me sound sexist in any way, but I'm not at all surprised to learn that a woman wrote this film.
No. No.
Well,
I don't know if it makes you sound sexist.
Not for a second that am I saying that I don't think a bloke could understand the female bond between the sisters like a woman could. I just think... I don't even know. I can't quite put my finger on it, but something about it screams written by a woman.
Mm.
And not the themes, not the dialogue itself.
Okay.
I think obviously there's a certain understanding there, but any human being capable of empathy and with the internet at their disposal could, you know, have written something similar. But yeah, I'm not surprised at all. I don't know what the director's done other than this.
No.
I think he did the sequels as well.
Okay.
But don't quote me on that. I'd be quite interested to hear what you think of the second film, actually.
Yeah, I'll have to keep an eye out for that.
Yeah. What about the... Obviously, we've talked about the sisters. What about the other characters? The parents. Let's talk about the parents.
Yeah.
Ex-Mrs. Tom Cruise. Mimi Rogers.
Yeah, she... jumped in my estimation towards the end.
Yeah, she added a weird element of dark comedy.
Yeah,
because her character was kind of big compared to how everybody else played theirs.
Yeah,
but it worked.
Yeah,
somehow within that world. I don't know, and almost made it more understandable that the girls had turned out the way they had because of their weirdly domineering, prissy mother, and largely emotionally absent father, I guess.
Yeah. It would make sense, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, what can you say about the dad, really? His role was very minimal, which I think says a lot.
Yeah.
The male roles within this film are fairly throwaway, apart from the drug dealer, who played quite a substantial part. But again, he was kept on the periphery, like they lied to him. He didn't have a great ending.
No.
And he was kind of a bad dude. He was a drug dealer, and it's definitely, this is a woman's film.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, this is probably what I'd consider like the ultimate female oriented horror.
Probably a good choice we did it for February.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dom, for suggesting this one. But oh, your computer did a thing.
It did, didn't it? Just ignore it. It'll go away.
Rude. But yeah, so it's definitely, the emphasis is very much on the female roles, obviously. Given, well, that sounds stupid, given the fact that it's principal, the leads are women, and that it's about like getting your period, essentially.
Yeah.
Let's not sugarcoat it. But yeah, Mimi Rogers surprised me. I never credited her as somebody who had much of a sense of humour. Okay. And I think anybody involved in this project probably had a decent sense of humour. Reading that script, you would have giggled a few times. Like, I think it's quite a feat that they played it as straight as they did.
Yeah.
Because some of it could have easily translated to ridiculousness.
Yeah.
It's kind of a wonder that they executed it so well, I think. Especially like her character, because she was so exaggerated. She's quite cartoonish compared to everything else that felt quite grounded in reality, but it worked. It absolutely worked. She's not somebody that I have a great amount of respect for in real life. Okay. If the rumours about her getting Tom Cruise into like Scientology are true, she's a bit crazy, apparently. But she was in Hiding Allegedly. House, which is my favourite Gary Busey movie, so I'll forgive her. Yeah. Anything else you want to talk about before we wrap up?
I don't think so. I think we've covered it.
Yeah. What would you give it out of 10? We haven't done this yet.
We haven't, have we?
This is something that harks back to the old podcast.
I
so give us an out of 10 and a summary.
Thinking, like a 7?
7's quite high.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I like the, you know, they kind of, obviously they made some really interesting choices in terms of the transformation of the werewolf.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it being slow because you saw there was a development in character, because as she was changing, she was getting meaner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that, you know, it's perhaps was missing from American Mary. Not that she was getting, but you didn't get the sense it was gradual.
That, to be honest, now you've mentioned that, that was one of my biggest complaints.
Yeah.
Because the change, she did a 180.
Yeah.
It was an overnight thing. It was like, all these things happen to her, people keep shitting on her. Not literally, that would be gross. And then, obviously, the big thing happens.
Yeah.
And then it's like that. And it didn't ring true to me. I think if they'd kept that more gradual, that would have been way more believable. And I think I would have seen her a little bit more.
Yeah, but that's what I enjoyed about this one. You know, you got the sense that kind of, you know, first she was kind of her normal self, then she got more aggressive and she got confused by being so aggressive, and then, you know, kind of got worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
She accepted it, she got more into it, and, you know, it was a really nice kind of portrayal.
Very human, considering she was turning into a werewolf. But that's the best way to do it.
Definitely.
Because you can't really empathise with a werewolf.
No.
Because they don't exist, for a start.
Not really.
So 7, that's pretty solid.
Yeah.
I think I'd go as high as an 8.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's... Oh, fuck it, 9. 9! Do you know what? 9.
Go for it.
It's a film that I love a lot. And I'm not going to make any excuses. It's a 9. It's... It's a really good horror film. It's got some really interesting visual choices.
Mm-hmm.
It's got really good performances. It's got a really good script. It's got a fantastic practical effects. It's a really good character piece. It's emotional. It's funny in places.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you jump in other places. It's everything you want from a really good horror movie.
It's
everything I want from a really good horror movie. I'm not presuming what anybody else wants. Yeah, definitely. 9 out of 10 for me.
Wow.
I will watch it again and again. I'm quite
sure. And indeed you have.
Yeah, I will continue to, sir. So on that note...
There we go.
I think we're wrapped on Ginger Snaps.
We are indeed.
So, obviously we mentioned it at the start of the show, going back to our original choice, mm-hmm. next time, fortnight from now, we will be doing Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon.
Which I'm very excited about.
I'm very excited about it too. Holy shit, I'm very excited. I think there's going to be a lot to talk about.
I hope so.
It's going to be fun.
I hope so.
So yeah, talk to us. Talk to us about werewolves. Talk to us about Women in Horror Month. Talk to us about Catherine Isabel and her no nudity clause. Anything you want to talk about. Find us on Twitter at Radio Gore. Yep. Gore Press.
Radio Gore Press.
Oh no, I'm so used to saying Gorecast. That's going to take some getting used to. You can find us on Facebook. This is going to be confusing. At
the Gore Press,
Gorecast for now. And you can email us at mail@gorepress.com.
Yes.
And obviously visit the site. We've got a couple new reviews up as of yesterday. Ben reviewed Cold Prey.
Okay.
Which is, it's a few years old now, but it's kind of a seminal Norwegian slasher movie. And in a very, very similar vein, Scullion reviewed a film called Frost.
Okay.
All very cold films.
Yeah, well.
Very seasonal.
About to say it's winter. Well,
yeah.
Spring or who knows what winter is right now.
So there's always a lot to read, and we do have competitions and the occasional fun thing, so hop on over to the site.
And everyone loves the occasional fun thing.
I do love occasional fun things. I'm very partial.
Only occasional though.
No, if it's too frequent, they're not special anymore.
No.
I'm quite partial to occasional fun things. Let's not get carried away. So until next time, thank you for listening. I'm Sarah, this is Phil, and we'll be back in a fortnight.
See you soon.
Bye.